Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is a Thursday, April 27th, 2023. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great advantage for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you do that, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they engage the use of these tools actively in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, we would appreciate it if you would do so. You can either do so by calling in live at 563-999-3581. And press 1 on your phone. Or you can send an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get an email with a comment or a question or a testimonial from you, we will address that on the internet show. And then as time allows, send you a notice about what day and time that was discussed, and you can listen back to the archives to get access to the input. And as I like to say, we appreciate when people do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention with this work is to be of service, and if you will let us know how these topics and choice of book sharings and worksheet processes and discussions are landing for you, and or what would be of more value to you, that will make it far easier for us to live into that intention with that work. I've gotten several nice compliments about the interview with Laura McGowan that is available either on YouTube, if you go to YouTube and search for journeysdream.org or journeysdream and Laura McGowan. You can listen or watch the video if you go to onyourmindpodcast.org. You can listen to the podcast audio and or see the transcript. And as I mentioned the other day, we are working completely on word of mouth with that these days. There is no budget to promote that in that nonprofit at this time. And so we appreciate it whenever anybody decides to share that with friends or family or on their social media feed. That's a discussion around her first two books, her second book released this year. Her first book was titled We Are the Luckiest and is basically a memoir of her struggle with alcohol addiction and her her path to building a healthy, vibrant life. And her second book is titled Push Off From Here. And it's a deeper dive explanation of the 9 statements that she said she wished people had told her this soon and often as she was early in the process of recovery from alcohol abuse. So, and as I mentioned, from time to time, we enjoy when people listen to those podcasts and give us feedback, and we're also looking for suggestions. If you have a favorite podcast that you listen to or a favorite spiritual teacher or a favorite book that's really helped you in your life, if you would be so kind as to let us know, let me know, give us the recommendation, and I will do what I can to reach out to that person or those people and see if we can't get them to agree to an interview. Again, the Journey's Dream non-for-profit is doing a variety of things, and one of the things it's doing is to try to help rewrite the narrative in this country, the narrative on mental health. From whatever it is, as this major problem and as that you've tapped into or a self-help guru that's really helped turn your life around and you would be so kind as to share that thought with us, it would be appreciated. Again, you can do that through calling in live at 563-999-3581 or you can do that through the email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org or jeanie@yagain.org. That's whyagain.org. I am looking forward to doing another interview this afternoon with Dr. Bradley Nelson on his new book, The Body Code, which is a follow-up to his book, The Emotion Code. And if you are interested in things like that, his book, The Emotion Code, I interviewed him a couple of years ago on that. And that interview is also available at onyourmindpodcast.org. So I'm going to turn to the book, A Walk in the Physical, and the essays in that book yesterday I read the short essay on how whatever you experience, whatever events occur in your life is a gold mine for you. And in order to extract the value from the events that unfold in and around your life, you must surrender to it. And surrender to the flow of life rather than your ideas around it and judgments around it. And when I say that, one of the next essays is Relinquishing Judgment. That's essay number 38. And it reads, judgment pervades our society. We constantly label, categorize, and place blame. When something that we deem bad happens, we quickly seek to identify who's at fault. The ego is deeply attached to the idea that there are enemies somewhere out in the world. In truth, there is no enemy. There is never truly an enemy. All of us are integrally spiritually connected to one another. We may be currently entertaining the deep illusion of separation, but nevertheless, fundamentally, we are all individuated facets of the same great spirit. How can there ever be an enemy when the person who appears to us to be other than us is always a part of us? Those among us who are acting hurtfully are simply doing so out of ignorance caused by being on this side of the veil, ignorance of their own undiminishable power, ignorance of their own inherent worthiness, ignorance of the unspeakable love that they are and that exists for them. Everyone who acts hurtfully is suffering themselves. They are suffering for lack of love in their own internal experience. There is no lack of love, but they've created the belief of separation, the dream of separation, and therefore they've created a personal experience of being without love. And that dream they're in, that hallucination they're in, that belief that they are without love has prompted them to act out of fear. So the question arises, can you forgive your brother and sister who is suffering just as you have suffered? And in this case, the word forgive is what Michael Rice would call pardon. Can you pardon them? Can you let them off the hook for suffering just as you have suffered? Can you pardon them for being afraid? Can you have compassion for them for being afraid when you realize you've been in fear before and you've been afraid before and you've been operating from the dream of separation and you've done nasty, angry, hurtful, insulting things to other people? The invitation here is to relinquish your need to place blame or to be right . And that's the core of the reality management worksheet process, is that I cancel my need to be right. I cancel the goal I have. I cancel all the thoughts that I pour my mind energy into and release myself from the emotions that that creates and ask to be shown something else. So the invitation is to relinquish your need to place blame or be on the side of what is right. Because the sense of empowerment one may gain in doing so is only a false illusion set up by the ego. It's a fake security. The ego may proclaim, I now have the power over the situation because I have identified the cause of my duress. Or the ego might say, I now affirm that I am good and justified because of the group I belong to, or any other personal justification of power. But such proclamations are illusions. And like all illusions of the ego, they are created to give us a false sense of comfort, which we often embrace wholeheartedly, rather than facing our fears and feeling our discomforts. You do not need the securities of the ego, including the security that judgment seems to provide. The truth stands firm and strong, always. You are loved, you are cherished, you are divine, and so is the person next to you. That truth, when actually recognized, is far more comforting than the false comfort that any egoic judgment may provide. What's that truth that's far more comforting than judgment? We come from love, we're made of love, we are love, and so is everyone and everything we interact with, and every other judgment and conclusion is false. So, this actually evolved in the conversation with Laura McGowan, and I heard myself saying something I don't think I've ever heard before, but it had to do with abstaining from judgment, viewing judgment as one of the addictions we have. We've become addicted to judging. We've been so programmed to judge, we actually believe we need to judge. How could we accomplish anything if we don't judge? And yet, great, great spiritual teachers for thousands of years have been trying to shine the light of awareness for us onto what happens when we judge. In the Way of Mastery, it says, whenever you judge, it's so disruptive that literally the cells in your body do not function properly. The Way of Mastery says, if you understood what happens whenever you judge, you would never judge again. Krishnamurti, in his teachings, would talk about the essential improvement in our lives that happens when we learn to live in direct observation, when we learn to live in the question rather than judging, rather than arguing about what's right or wrong, but seeing the truth of it and staying open is with the option of, here are the consequences you get with judging, and here are the consequences you get when you stay open and live in the question. Really argue about what's right and what's wrong, and to have the right answer, and we're talking about in the support group, too, that some of us are actually terrified about canceling our need to be right because we were literally punished as children, whether at home and or at school, whenever we got something wrong. So part of this drive to be right is an actual fear, that unconscious fear of being punished if we don't get it right. And so we talk about how if I'm going to learn anything, Guy Finley says, if I'm going to learn something from a situation or another person, I have to make myself subordinate to that from which I would learn or from whom I would learn. My way of saying it is, I have to go into a situation with the direct observation that I don't know everything. And then the next observation by extension is, so whatever it is I think I know is either only partially true and perhaps even completely false. One of the things that came across my awareness this morning was the revelation of quantum spin liquid. Now, how many of you know about quantum spin liquid and its effects and its characteristics and what it might be used for? Before this morning in the article I read from Popular Science, I had no idea. So it's easy for me, the more I practice this, to realize that I clearly don't know much of anything. And I benefited greatly from The Way of Mastery as we were reading it last year, and it's because I've read it for years, with the exercise that has me pick up something and remind myself, and I mean by something, I mean any object on my desktop, any object when I'm out at a restaurant, and if I'm at my house or a friend's house, pick up any object, whether it's a knickknack on a shelf or a tool in the kitchen, and just realize, spend some time realizing, I don't know where this thing came from. I don't know who had the first idea for a can opener. I don't know where this metal or plastic or combination of metal or plastic came from or how it was put together or who designed it. And the more I engaged that exercise, the more I softened to the idea that I'm not really that knowledgeable, right? I'm like a babe in the woods, right? I am constantly bumping up against things that I don't understand. And that bump is more like into a soft plush cushion when I acknowledge that I don't know it, and it's more like falling on a sharp stick when I try and say, I'm right and this situation is wrong. It's very uncomfortable for me. I don't know about anybody else, but for me, I'm very uncomfortable whenever I'm, so to speak, butting heads with somebody over an issue. Which is why I get so much benefit from the God response. That I gave a talk on the God response years ago, and it was, what's the God response? The God response is simply a one-word response. Whatever happens, the God response is, okay. You want to be depressed, and you've got validation for it, and you want to argue for your depression? Life, the flow of life, love, the creation itself says, okay, you can create more depression. You want to flip that around and create joy? You can create joy. You have this creative force that we call mind energy. Somebody wants to say they don't believe what I'm talking about? My response is, okay, I don't feel compelled any longer to try to convince somebody that I'm right and they're wrong. Why? Because I keep learning more and more about how divergent our actual experiences are, how divergent even our perceptions are. Some people may have seen this thing on the internet a few years ago where there was a dress, and the question was, is this dress, you know, black and gold or blue and yellow or whatever? And people argued extensively over what color the dress actually was. Well, I saw that on the internet, and I gave it a little bit of credence but I didn't have that experience. I didn't go down the rabbit hole of, you know, telling people what I saw and trying to find somebody that I actually trusted would tell me the truth and see if they could see a different color. I didn't do that. But a couple months ago, we had a family gathering, and my sons brought out a card game, a role-playing card game, with all kinds of designs on it and colors, and they started explaining to me how the red cards mean this and the black cards mean that. And they would hand me a card and say, this is a red card because you can see the red color in this circle here. And what I saw in that circle was a bright yellow color. So because the game had lots of different facets to it and there were all kinds of other things on the card, I thought maybe I was missing something. Maybe there was a red token or thread somewhere on the border or something. But eventually, after we were playing the game for a while and they kept saying that, I said, let me just interrupt the game and ask you, are you saying that this looks red to you? And they said, yeah, why? And I said, because it's yellow to me. And they were so convinced that I was just pulling their leg that my younger son pulled up his phone and searched for a color blindness test and insisted I take it. So I answered all the questions on the colorblind test, and the result was normal color vision. And he couldn't believe it. Then they went back to thinking that I was just pulling their leg. And that's when I remembered this thing about the dress on the internet meme. And I said, no, what the scientists are telling us is that we can't really predict how this shows up for another person. And we have these kinds of misperceptions all the time, but they don't cause any friction because we slide right by them or it's on something that we don't think is as significant. And also, many of the head-butting arguments we have are over just such misperceptions. And that's the core of this work, to understand I'm actually creating my experience of life by how I choose to focus my conscious awareness moment to moment, by the interpretations I choose to place on the flow of life, and by how I choose to interpret and respond to the events, the flow of life itself. So somehow I feel like I've just gone down a rabbit hole or veered too far away from what I was reading. So I'm going to back up and review. Oh, yes, the idea of relinquishing judgment. So the point is, judgment seems to give us a sense of strength and being solid and safety. And yet, as this essay says, you do not need those securities, the securities of the ego that are this perceived strength and safety. You don't need this, the perceived security that judgment provides, because your true nature is infinite, infinitely strong, infinitely loving, infinitely growing and learning and expanding, infinitely safe in each new present moment. And if you can remove enough of the negative impressions and trauma energies and negative beliefs from your history of thought on this, on the planet this time around, if you can remove enough of those, you will get easier and easier access to the truth behind these words. Right? This, the words at the end of this essay are, you are loved, you are cherished, you are divine. And so is the person next to you. And, you know, the fact of the matter is most of the people I work with in therapy, they don't realize that. They've got too many negative experiences and trauma patterns and false beliefs. We know they're false because they're negative, that they hold on to that block them from seeing their true nature. And everything about the work that Michael and Jeannie promote here, everything about the Mindshifter support groups, is to provide people with awareness of this and then the tools for dismantling anything that's less than love from their energy system, from their recurrent thought patterns and beliefs, and to open people to a process that allows them to live in the observation, live in the question, and grow and learn things with greater ease. So we're hopeful that you're tapping into the use of these tools. And that you're actually, whether it's one worksheet at a time, one EFT tapping session at a time, one breath session at a time, that you're removing pieces of the negative beliefs, negative thought patterns, and trauma energies that all of us have, that we all carry with us into each moment. The next essay I was going to read is titled Thinking as Distinguished from Being. And I know I've read this before, but it was as a part of another collection of essays. But this essay reads, when you are thinking, you are lost in a dream of form. When you are being, you just are. It reminds me of an interview I saw, I think it was with Maya Angelou, and she talked about how after she faced this fear of death that she had, when she realized that death is the one promise that is going to be kept and she isn't going to get away from it, and then she dismantled her fear around that. Then she was able to just be fully present in every moment and bring all of herself right to this moment. And the interviewer said, well, that's now just notice the filter on this interviewer. Well, that's dangerous, isn't it? Because if you go into every moment thinking it's just this moment, then you're just going to take, and have no thought of the consequences. And Maya Angelou said, wow, no, it's the opposite for me. When I'm fully present in the moment, I bring all of myself to this moment and I'm giving all I have every moment. And I'm not thinking about giving it, I'm just there. Interacting, asking to be shown. She didn't say that, but this is how I'm blending this in with our work. So essay 41 is titled Thinking as Distinguished from Being. And it says, again, when you're thinking, you're lost in a dream of form. When you're being, you just are. No distinctions are necessary, no judgments are necessary, and all possibilities actually exist. The intent to dwell, quote, in the now, close quotes, is often referred to as being, quote, present, close quotes. Being present is like looking at a sunset and fully experiencing its beauty in the moment. You're simply being present with the experience, rather than quantifying or judging the experience with thought. Which reminds me of a John Mayer song where he says, you know, you should have seen this sunrise with your own eyes. I didn't have a camera. I was just there. Right? I wasn't thinking of taking a picture of it to send it to people I love like you. I was just there. So you should have seen the sunrise with your own eyes. And the next time, we'll do it together. But how much of our lives is spent, I need a selfie of this. I need a picture of this. I need to text somebody and make sure that they tune into this. It's just we're constantly thinking and therefore lost in a dream of form. And it's a very fruitful exercise to practice just being. That's in essence what meditation has as one of its best benefits. So, tend to dwell in the now is often referred to as being present. Being present is looking at the sunset and just soaking it in, not getting lost in the thoughts of comparing it to other sunrises or sunsets you've experienced, not thinking about who you wish was there with you to experience it alongside of you or who you can send a picture to. You're simply being present with the experience. You're not judging it. You're not comparing it. You're not lost in thought about it. You're just in the moment. The sunset admirer does not begin to think, you know, that sunset should have more pink in it, or more purple, or more red. In the moment that I'm thinking about it, in the moment that I'm judging it, I'm not there experiencing it fully anymore. This essay goes on and says, God, light, love, etc., often reaches out to us, speaks to us far more clearly in simple presence than in thoughts and judgments. There's a story in the Pierre Pratervan book where he was on a plane and he had dysentery. He had quite a bit of stomach upset and there was an interaction going on between people near him that he tapped into, and it was just so loving that he basically had an out-of-body experience. He was just so wide open, triggered by whatever got resonated in him and what he made this interaction between these other people mean, that he had an experience, one of those life-changing experiences that seemed to go on forever and may have only been, you know, a few seconds or minutes. And in that moment, that was such a powerful moment experience for him that he still remembers it. He still harkens back to it. He still derives benefit from it. It was a life-changing moment because these moments are eternal. These moments are outside of time. The essay goes on and says, if you slow down the momentum of your thoughts and you go far enough into the present moment and allow yourself to completely surrender to it, they say without judgment, I say in total allowance, you will find that rather than nothing being there, everything is there, including all of you. You'll find your awareness exists beyond the boundaries of your body, and that you can experience your being that transcends your entire physical identity and all of its thoughts and judgments. That's what happened to Pierre Pratervan and dozens of other people I've read over the years who've had powerful, life-changing moments, timeless moments. The essay goes on. The only things that separate you from the native transcendence are the thoughts, judgments, and beliefs that you have decided to cling to and formalize over time. How and why do we do that? Because we were kids and we were taught by our parents and our culture and our families. And as I mentioned earlier, sometimes because we were punished if we didn't jump into thought and reach the right conclusion or give the answer that the teacher or the parent wanted. And so we're very well trained with some memory of some rather severe consequences if we don't stay in judgment and thought and comparison. This present moment, the last paragraph in this essay reads, this present moment, this very moment right now, the great depths of your own being are available to you. While the momentum of your thoughts and judgments may be great, and they may seem to keep you far from being fully aware, recognize that any time you can take a step away from the thoughts and toward the awareness of the present moment itself, you become able to access the great depths of your own being. And as the Way of Mastery talks about in the third lesson, it says, forgiveness is the act of dismantling false perceptions that you project on yourself and others. And every time you dismantle those false perceptions, you take yourself deeper into the purity of your own consciousness. My eye and ear is saying that's exactly what's being said here. This present moment, this very moment right now, the great depths of your own being are available to you. The momentum of your thoughts is powerful, but the minute you step back from it, you can access the great depths of your own being. You can take yourself deeper into the purity of your own consciousness when you're not projecting negative interpretations of life's events onto the flow of life. Your pain wants to be heard. It's a very, very short essay, number 42, and it echoes what I was just listening to this morning in the book by Dr. Bradley Nelson. So many people that use the emotion code and the body code have learned that when they get an ache or a pain and they do their energetic work or their emotional work, they're very glad that they had the pain because now they've released something. Now they've gotten rid of something. Now they've avoided something even worse. Dr. Michael Rice says the purpose of pain is to metaphorically make your ears grow, to get you to listen, that there's a problem. And the problem is somewhere inside you. It's not outside of you. So this essay reads, when pain shows up at your door, let it in. You do not need to fear it. Guy Finley says, psychological and emotional pain is not your enemy. Fear of it prevents you from seeing this truth. You do not need to fear your pain. It is not necessary to open your door and go looking for pain to let it in, nor is it necessary to be excited that pain has showed up at your door. And when it shows up, open the door, let it walk in and be with it. Let it be your guest. Listen to the story it wants to tell you. Be a good listener. Drop the judgment. Move into allowance. When pain has shared all that it meant to express, being empty of anything else to say, it will leave you happily, often never to return. So, we have some time left, about 15 minutes, 14, 15 minutes. Our calling number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1 like Susan Bingham did, We can have a conversation. Welcome, Susan.
Hey. Ellen sent me this morning these little quotes, which fit right in with what you've been reading and talking about. This one is a tiny poem by Rumi. It's called Ill? If you desire healing, let yourself fall ill. Let yourself fall ill. And then Diederik Walczak wrote something similar. He said, let myself fall ill. Allow my feelings to rise. Become aware of all negative grievance feelings. If I do not, I'll never know what belief still needs to be transformed. Oh, I thought
exactly.
That would fit right in. Great.
Exactly. Yep.
Boy, oh boy, this is great stuff. And it's synchronicity again. This morning I got a call from my older sister who is 84 now, and she says, Sue, I'm tired. She says, I'm happy. I'm letting things go. And I don't mind the idea of dying. I kind of welcome it. I feel fine, but I am struggling. And her daughter was with her. She has two children, a daughter and a son. And her son has been bipolar for years and lives on the very edge of homelessness and goes into these periods of belligerent unwellness where he thinks everybody is horrible and he's got to move and he's got to get rid of his neighbors, and he projects basically. It's a terrible illness that he has. She said, this time around, I got exhausted. I just couldn't take it. I just ended up watching and listening and watching to what was happening to him, and I knew I didn't have the juice to deal with any of it. So I called Fawn, who is her daughter, and Fawn flew in from Colorado. And Fawn is making all kinds of arrangements for, if he'll go, hospitalization. But my sister is basically saying, "What wasn't that poem of Rumi? Even if it comes in and wrecks all your furniture or takes all your furniture, welcome it in." I forget that wonderful other poem. I think it was Rumi. My sister said, I'm just watching this, and I'm just tired enough to be allowing it and letting it all happen and watching to see what happens, but I'm not undone by it. In a way, she has reached a kind of enlightenment, and I think that's one of the blessings of getting older, is to allow...
It's a potential, right? Because clearly not everybody who gets older does it. Some people who get older, they fight, they kick, they scream, they build resentments about what didn't get accomplished in their life, et cetera. But this can be one of the benefits of the wisdom of age.
Yeah, that's true. And I've also been thinking about how we've been looking for housing options for Michael, who lives with us. He watched a video about a man who had been living in his van for years and gave all the reasons why he can no longer do that. I'm not sure I've told you about this before. Tell me if I have. I don't want to repeat.
About what?
About
Michael living in a
van? Living in a van and how he no longer wanted to do it. And Michael's been wanting to get a van, trade his SUV for a bigger van so he could live in it. And Michael texted me and said, you know what? I can't do that. I'm not going to try to get a van. I can't do that, which I thought was a tremendous breakthrough, because part of him has been not finding a van. And I'm wondering, is that because he doesn't want the van or they really aren't available? I have no way of knowing. But he said, I guess I have to find a room somewhere, just a place where I could be. So we've shifted gears a little, and we're exploring housing options for him nearby and also down near my daughter. But the lesson for me is I feel as if I'm finally allowing Michael to do what he needs to do. And the judging part has been much alleviated, too. I haven't felt as if I need to judge him for doing this or that around the house. And that power essay you read has had real effect. I can say to him, these are the things that need doing around here, and I don't want to do them, and you don't want to do them, but you're paying rent here, so you got to do them if you will. And he said, sure, I will. He's very willing. He isn't enterprising on finding things to do, but I've gotten up enough nerve to be able to say, how about this, and I'll put the vacuum cleaner out, or how about that? And he's willing. And so a lot has kind of loosened up. He's been like a human lesson book for us, Tim and me here. And it all of this coincides with that wonderful interchange you had with Laura McGowan. I thought it was just, as I wrote to you, a dialogue. Lots of good give and take and excitement and energy. So you got all worked up because you thought you talked too much. Well, it's an unusual interview, but it sort of like was a dialogue and a delicious one.
Thank you. I wasn't all worked up over it. I just thought, as I listened to it, boy, I wish I had just gotten quiet and let her talk more, because that's about her book and her. And I agree with you. It's a very nice dialogue. I think we both enjoyed it and had fun. And yet,
yeah,
as the original premise was, you know, in my role as interviewer, I basically stepped out of it more into being in a dialogue with her, which isn't a bad thing. It's just,
yeah,
it wasn't what I had set out to do, and I noticed it. So,
yeah, well, she seemed to love it. And you do open it up at the end and say, is there something we missed? You know, you always do that, and I like that you do that. But she didn't really add anything more. It's as if you all did really cover what she would have wanted to say on her own. So,
well, but she did. She went back to the idea of the our need to be seen and heard.
Yeah.
And gave me an opportunity to pipe up again, which which I wish, that's one I wish I hadn't done. But, you know, but it's not a bad thing.
You spent the whole interview showing her that you were seeing and hearing her, that you had heard her book, read her book. She must have loved that.
Yeah, I think that.
I know, as a composer, if somebody talks to me about a piece I've written in some detail, I think that is the most generous thing they could have done, is to listen to it. Anyway, you were saying.
Got it. I'm agreeing with you. I think she did enjoy it. I think that, you know, if it's a really good interview and both people don't enjoy it, it's probably not a really good interview. And
well,
you know, and clearly that same kind of thing happened with the Pierre Pratervand, or he wouldn't have had his people reach out to have me interview him again for his next book. So
I'm so glad for you that he's doing that. That is great.
Yeah, that'll happen a week from Monday. We'll do that. And I'm you know, already reading the preview copy of the book that they were kind enough to send me. So. And of course, it's a little bit different than his first two books, or the two books. He's written many more books than this, but the two books that we've talked about, and that is because it's about discerning what your own individual spiritual path is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about not just the gentle art of blessing, but it's about a very thoughtful review of how people get, and they fall into traps, and what happens with religion, and it's very much in line with what Michael and Jeannie promote here, which is you need to tap into your inner guidance, right? Spirit, God, light, love, truth, whatever, Ruka Dukucha, is available to everyone. And that's essentially what the heart of this book is to figure out how everyone can do that and what are the warning signs for I might be off the mark. Again, the title of the book, if anybody wants to pre-order it, is The Gentle Art of Spiritual Discernment, subtitled A Guide to Discovering Your Personal Path. And it'll be out in July 18th or something, but we'll have the interview before that. And after that interview is done, I will run that as an episode of this Mind Shifters Radio. I'll edit it down so that it may be shorter than an hour, I don't know, but I'll edit it in a way where it doesn't talk all about the Journey's Dream and the On Your Mind podcast and just is an episode of the Mind Shifters Radio.
Right.
Because, you know, that started happening a little bit when I started my own second hour 4 years ago, whatever, a little over 4 years ago. And then about 3.5 years ago, they asked me to do the Journey's Dream thing.
Wow.
Which has professional editing and, you know, theme music and all of this other, launching it to all these different platforms. And so since then, when I've gotten, you know, high-value people to interview, instead of doing it, you know, making them conform to, here we are live on the Mind Shifters Radio, so you've got to be available at this time slot, letting them tell me when they're available and me doing it through Zoom and then, you know, having it formatted in that edit. And then it's a great thing for Pierre Pradervan because he's in Geneva, Switzerland, so instead of, it's like a 6 or 7 hour difference. And so instead of making him conform to, yeah, we have to be live at 11 a.m. Central Time, he can say, yeah, how about you just, okay. So I'm going to basically interview him at 8:30 in the morning. So
Whoa.
It's a more reasonable midday time for him.
Right.
So that's what's on the docket coming up. I just looked at the time and realized that we have run through our hour. So thank you for your comments here at the end of the hour. Thank you, Susan, as always. Thank you for the feedback on the Laura McGowan interview. That's on the onyourmindpodcast.org. And I'll mute you so you can listen into the second hour. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate it, and I hope you have a good rest of the day.
Thanks. You too. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is Thursday, April the 27th, 2023. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1. And that puts you in the queue to talk. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I'll invite you to go to the website, whyagain.org. And I made a couple changes. We had a section on the Beatitudes. There's actually a page that's called Beatitudes Pages. So if you put whyagain.org/Beatitudes, it will take you there, and that's where we did 4 radio shows in December of 2021 with Mark Caddis and Michael talking about the Beatitudes, and then there was another show June the 13th of 22 and June the 14th of 22 that talked about the Beatitudes. And I originally had those on Vimeo, and I've changed it over to being on the YouTube channel. So you can access those directly on our website, or you can go to the YouTube channel and access them there. I invite you to go to YouTube, and there's actually a little link if you're on whyagain.org. Up in the upper right corner, there's the little Facebook emblem, Vimeo, and then Tube emblem, and then there's also iHeartRadio. But if you click on the YouTube channel, it'll take you directly to Michael Rice underscore why again, and you can click on videos, and there are all kinds of videos out there for you to listen to. And we have a total of 116 videos, actually. And we've got well over 1,000 subscribers now. Thank you all. We appreciate the support. And invite you to... Okay, hold on a minute. I'm on the radio. Thank you. And Aria's just creating a book. So she's learning how... We went to the book fair yesterday. That's why we weren't on the show. We took a play day, and Michael and I went with her to the book fair at her school. And she picked out several books that she can learn to read, and she's doing really good using phonics and sounding out the letters and coming up with words. So today she said, can we have another play day? And I said, no, not today. I said, we've got to be live on the show. So anyway, okay, you can show Papaw that. Okay, well, let me finish talking first. Wait till Papaw talks, and then I'll be with you, okay? So anyway, I invite you to go to either the website or to the YouTube channel and check out some of the videos. And I had someone, it was actually ended up, I believe, being kind of a fake. I always tell you all that if you find something on the website that's not working, to let me know. And so I had gotten an email from someone, and they were like, I found a link on your website, and it's not working, and where do I send the information? And I responded and said, you can send it here to this email. And then they sent back, and they gave me a link, which if I click it, it works just fine on the website. And then they proceeded to try to sell themselves and what they would like to put on their website. I was like, okay, people need a life. So anyway, but if you do find something on the website that can, send me a note to Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And let me know the URL that's not working for you, and I will get it fixed. And so anyway, if you have questions or comments, you know, I actually am in the process of going through the Google account. They've said that they're not sure that the app complies with all of their rules, and it does. But, you know, I guess most apps, if you have to put your name and email address in, then they share that or they sell it to other people or whatever. And I guess they're just trying to make sure that that's not what we're doing. And I told them, no, we didn't sell products. We didn't have ads. And that it was totally free. And so hopefully I've answered all their questions and they will give us approval. Otherwise, they said the app will quit working in 10 days. So... Michael's just on, and we do have a hand up, Michael, but I'll welcome you to the show first.
Awesome. Thank you, dear heart. Let's go ahead and see who's calling and what's on their mind.
All right. It's area code 541. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Shalinda.
Hey, young lady. Welcome.
Hello. Hello. Has anybody mentioned to you that you're empowered to heal program you put on yesterday cut out in about 10-15 minutes, and I never could get back on the show.
Have not heard that from anybody. No, did not know that.
Maybe if someone else was on,
you could let us know if you were cut off of it too. Jeannie?
Really? That's the second time.
I have not had anybody say anything, and I will double check it. And it says
thank you.
That
we'll follow up.
I'm looking at the auto clips now, and empowered.
I was kicked off.
It must have been a Blog Talk thing because it says that the recording is 58 minutes and 37 seconds. So it should have gone the entire hour.
I tried for about 10 minutes to get back on, and I couldn't get in.
That's a Blog Talk thing. So I will definitely let them know that there was some issue on their end. I know they're having.
Go ahead.
And if anyone else has a problem, if you drop Jeannie or I a text or an email, let us know. We'll need to follow up on that with them. Not good.
It just It's just concerning me because that's the second time one of your programs has, you know, the other one was the Aramaicisms, and I thought this is really strange that you're getting blocked off the air during those programs, and I just wondered.
For sure.
Because the one thing I have discovered for myself, the more I get into the Aramaic gospel, the less I'm involved with my control issues, which means to me that I am possibly opening up to the fact that I am the one generating my own control. But that's kind of counter to what the world thinks, right?
We definitely want to go counter to what the world thinks because most of it's insane. Just look at the results
we're
getting. It's pretty bizarre.
That's a tricky balancing act, isn't it?
And I just FYI, I went out and looked on Blog Talk on there where they record the show afterwards, and it says that between Tim's show and our show that it was an hour and 54 minutes long. So that means it did play for the whole time. So I don't know. They must have just been something in the dial-in numbers or something that, but.
And maybe we need to look at the second hour and see if it actually, yeah, if the archive is actually there.
I just want to say you can go to the archive and listen to it too.
Yeah. Well, I can definitely do that because I'm going to go to the garden this morning. Yay.
I just came in from the garden working on the compost pile.
In fact, I'm in the greenhouse right now because we're supposed to open the greenhouse up, and I'm trying to clean the pots out a little bit. So, ooh, it feels wonderful.
Nice, nice. Very cool. Well, anything else on your mind? Any questions about the Aramaic or where it was going yesterday?
No, I just was really raptly listening to that Empowered to Heal since I bought the video that time. I wasn't able to access it on my computers, but now I know why.
All right, young lady, we appreciate you.
I'd really like to listen to the whole thing. That would be sweet. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
All right, blessings.
Blessings.
All right, Ms. Jeannie, anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet.
No? Okay. Well, let's talk about stress a little bit. I've been doing some work, actually, an exchange with a massage therapist here locally, and she had just chosen to do a personal code evaluation to look at, you know, how is the mind functioning? Where are the learning points? And it was kind of an unusual evaluation because as I announced to her, well, the thing we need to do is get more stress for you. You don't have enough stress. And she's like, what? I have too much. Well, let's look at that. And yeah, most people carry too much stress, but most of their stress is useless. So we actually have a workshop called Getting the Stress You Need. And the offering is that without stress, you're in deep, deep trouble because stress is what causes behavior. And the caution point is that you make sure that your stress is useful for what your purpose is and what's going on in your world at the moment. And to become a conscious creator of stress is so important. Having done many, many workshops over the years on goals and stress, I find it interesting that I have never been able to find anywhere except in the Aramaic the understanding of how stress is created and that you need stress. Without it, you're in trouble. And you know, I've talked to people, I've done workshops where you go to a goal-setting workshop and you come out of that workshop with your daily goals, your weekly goals, your monthly goals, your semi-annual goals, your annual goal, your five-year goal, your 10-year goal, your 20-year goal, your lifetime goal, and people walk out of the workshop so loaded down with stress that, oh, yes, they're driven to get things done, but they've destroyed the space for joy to show up. And when you recognize that the way stress is created, you know, people talk about, oh, that was a very stressful situation. No, it's not. There's no such thing as a stressful situation. You know, we have two people in the same situation. One's going nuts because it's so stressful. The other's staying there humming away going, so what? Why is one person in stress and the other one isn't if it's a stressful situation? No, the way that stress is created is by putting a goal into the mind, which is a wonderful mechanism to understand. When you set a goal, you said to the mind, mind, I have a job for you to do. I want you to resolve this stress. In other words, give me the best information you've got to complete this goal. And once a goal is set in the mind, there are only two ways to get rid of it. You either accomplish the goal or you remove, you cancel the goal. If you don't do one of those two things, then the stress goes on and on and on and on. Literally for a lifetime. People go to bed at night and say, why won't my mind shut off? Because you've loaded it with so much stress. You've told it you have a job for it to do. And if you're laying in bed and going gling, 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 thought after thought after thought after thought, your mind is just doing the job you gave it. What if you went to bed stress-free except for the goal to have deep, restful, regenerative sleep and have feedback on your framed goals for the next day? We have a sheet called the Mind Goal Management Sheet, and it's about how to produce that result. And the last thing you do before you go to bed at night is you cancel every goal from every time in your life that a goal was not either accomplished or canceled. And that way you only have stresses that are useful. You know, you wouldn't know it by the way the Greeks translate the phrase, but if you go back 2,000 years ago, you hear this man Yeshua supposedly saying, of at least the words the Greeks put in his mouth, which are totally, completely in error, but we hear him supposedly saying, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. And you say to yourself, well, why would I want to have evil? And what do you mean, sufficient for the day? What, like, where do you go? Where are you going with that? If you go to the Aramaic language, you don't find him saying anything about being sufficient for the day or the evils thereof. What you find is he's giving you instructions on how to set your goals and in what time frame to set your goals, how to manage your mind. So the word evil in Aramaic has at least two different translations. One of them relates to the word sin. You'll recall we've told you that the word sin in Aramaic is an archery term, which means off the mark. If you put an energy that's off the mark into your tissue structure, then your tissue is going to start to decay, and that will be a disease process, and ultimately enough disease processes and people die. So when they said the wages of sin is death, that wasn't some kind of theological threat. God's going to get you for your sins. He's saying if you put enough disintegrative energy, energy that's off the mark, into your tissue structure, then your organs are going to start to break down and fail. Sufficient for the day are the evils thereof is a pointer to the second meaning or translation of the word evil. And that is that evil means unripened or incomplete. So if I have a green banana, I have a banana that in Aramaic I would properly call evil. if I have an over-ripened, brown, mushy, falling apart, you know, fruit flies are flying around it, that banana is evil. Not that there's anything wrong with it, it's just not ripe. Now, if I have this nice yellow with some brown specks on it, banana, that banana would be ripe. The word evil would not be used to describe it, but on either side of ripe, you've got evil. So when you understand that meaning, then you hear these words, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. He's saying, only create stresses around your next waking period, or you will overload your mind, sufficient for the day. In other words, don't carry any more goals than for your next waking period. If you've got something to achieve next week, you don't want to set it as a goal in your mind. Or guess what? You'll go to bed tonight and your mind will be going, oh, yeah, next week we have to do this. Well, let me see. We could do this. We could do this. Here are all the options. And the mind runs and runs. And people say, I don't know why my goal, mine won't stop. Well, cancel the goal. Remove it. It's interesting that when you look at the forgiveness process in Aramaic, the core of the forgiveness process is the canceling of a goal and therefore the reducing of stress. Because when you cancel a goal, whatever the mind is trying to achieve there collapses. So you only frame and set goals for the day in front of you. Not for tomorrow. He says, don't be concerned about tomorrow or next week or next month or next year or 10 years. Well, gee, Michael, how am I going to go? What direction my life is going to go? Well, you've got a planner. You're going to plan the next 10, 20, 50, 100, 200, 500 years. Please plan it. But don't frame or set goals. Actually, let's put that in two places. Don't frame goals until the night before, and don't set them until the morning of the day that you're going to achieve that goal, that you're going to work on completing that goal. And if nighttime comes and you haven't had the opportunity to complete it, then remove it from your mind, or your mind will be rolling, 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 trying to figure out a way to get that goal accomplished. Now, you recall we've offered the Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, they can measure approximately 10,000 units of electrical activity in the brain, that in that time frame, the max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits, a little tiny, tiny piece of information compared to all that's going on in the mind. So if there's all that information firing in the mind, where does the goal come in? The goals you tell your mind to achieve become the drivers that cause your mind to output whatever its guidance is for you. Literally, it drives perception. And if perception is pained, that is based in some form of hostility or fear, then you better collapse that perception and look at what's going on underneath the surface and change it. How do you collapse perception? You cancel the goal that's driving it. And when that thing collapses, it collapses in on itself. A good visual of that, not a happy event, but you might remember, pretty much everybody saw, maybe too many times, the 9/11 towers come down. You'll remember those huge towers collapsed at free fall speed into their own footprint. Now, mechanically, that's an absolute impossibility, but that's another topic. We're not going to get into that. But think about how those towers fell into their own footprint and recognize that a perceptual construct in your mind is like that tower, and if you know how to collapse it, it's going to collapse into its own footprint. And when it does, pardon me, you've got access to the underlying dynamic of the mind, the unconscious part of the mind, where that perceptual construct is rooted. You might remember the lesson in the Course in Miracles. It says, you may wonder why you must look upon your hatred and realize its full extent. And then it goes on to say, because these things don't stand on their own. And so when you know how to collapse your perceptual constructs and they collapse into themselves, you've now got access to the unconscious part of your own mind. And with that kind of access, you get to clean it up. That's the power of forgiveness. And it all relates to stress. So stress is a wonderful friend, an awesome thing to have, because it is behind all behavior. You know, if you're sitting on a tack and you had no stress, there would be no goal to get up off the tack, and sooner or later there'd be an infection and you'd be in trouble. If you didn't have the stress of thirst and set a goal to quench that thirst to get some water, then you'd dehydrate. So goals are wondrous things, but only frame and set them in the immediate time frame in which you're going to achieve those goals. And everything else, rather than making it a goal, put it in your planner. You know, I want to build a house. I don't have a goal to build a house. I have a plan to build a house. Today, I can order, talk to the architect and get the blueprint started. So I'd have a goal to contact the architect, explain what we're going to do, and get the blueprint started. But I wouldn't set a goal to go out and buy the nails with which to put the boards together. I wouldn't go out and order the concrete. I wouldn't order the roofing materials. I wouldn't order the insulation. Those things will all come in their own time, in order. And sadly, because that piece of teaching was removed from the teachings of Yeshua, most people are overstressed most of the time, and most of the stress they're experiencing is not productive. It's useless. Because if I've got a plan for something 6 months from now, and I set a goal to accomplish it, there's nothing I can do about accomplishing that until 6 months from now. So I don't need that stress, you know, laying around in my mind for 6 months, causing my mind to churn and churn and churn and stir up thoughts that are useless because I can't act on them today. So sufficient for the day are the evils thereof is just frame and set your goals just for the next waking period, and the next day do it again, and the next day do it again, and you will have the kind of stresses that you need that are useful to you, that will keep your body in a settled, quiet state, rather than, oh, I've got the next year on my shoulders. I've only got the next 8 waking hours. If you're interested in getting more information about that, you can go to the website. And the name of the worksheet for that Getting the Stress You Need video is the Mind Goal Management Sheet. So you might look up that Mind Goal Management Sheet. It explains the whole process of stress. And then there's a step-by-step. Here's how you frame goals, not set them, but frame them, so that you can get feedback on them. And then in the appropriate time frame, set in place the stresses that you need to produce the result and carry on stress-free. So I hope that's a useful chunk of information for you. And if it arouses any questions or needs any clarification, our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, is 563-999-3581, 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you have a question, all you do is push 1. That will raise a hand in the control panel. Jeannie will know you want to speak to us, and she'll introduce you by your area code. So if you're out there in listener land, what's on your mind? How can we support you? Push 1. Let's have a conversation about it. Awesome. Let's say hello.
It's Cecilia, area code 480. You're on the air.
Can you hear me okay?
You're loud and clear, young lady. How are you?
Oh, good. I'm good. And interestingly,
I'm doing this intensive, and it's good because there's not been a lot of time since I've had all your work and all that kind of stuff that I ever wanted to do anything. So I got out getting the stress you need last night, or actually while I was painting yesterday, but it's hard to concentrate when I'm doing two things. So I watched it again this morning. What I got out of it this morning was, even though I've seen it on the video, how you take that circle and put a triangle for a nose on it, and then you dissect the parts of the brain as being the frontal lobes as being intention, and the back of the brain being, you can say it.
Perception.
Yeah. Is that when you put the filters in there in the intention and in the perception, and how fear is a demon that needs to be cast out, and that we're here to create heaven on earth, even though you didn't say that in that video, and that it's just all my mind's just finally going, wow, okay.
Got it.
Yeah, I'm getting brain cells for this finally.
Awesome.
So it's interesting, though, when they're at the worksheet, I would love that on the worksheet, but I'll have a sketch of it for myself for the worksheet to remind myself that fear is a demon to be cast out, and fear and hostility.
Right.
Keep my mind set. Can you give more examples on how to keep Rachma set and Kuva set in the mind, more tools to make it more specific for those like me? Or is that specific?
Well, you've got a starting point, and, you know, the whole understanding of that filter system, as you notice, takes time to build the brain cells. And then literally every other tool correlates. Like, for instance, if hostility comes up, then Rachma, love over intentions, Kuva, love over perceptions, tends to collapse. So what am I going to do? Well, that's the point where I'm going to say, there's something I need to forgive here. So then I'm going to pull out the forgiveness worksheet and work through that. And wow, I'm feeling so overstressed that, you know, I feel nothing but stress and strain. And oh, so now what do I want to do? I want to look at, what are my goals? What do I need to clean up? I need to start to manage my mind. And especially probably one of the most important things. And we've got a culture that set goals, and people don't realize how much stress they're creating. And the major feature, the major tool that they need to use is the canceling of goals. Cancel every goal that drives my mind to distraction about something that, I need to do 3 weeks from now. Get rid of that goal so my mind quiets down there. And when my mind quiets down, I have more of my resources back. So every tool that we're talking about ties into the mind goal management sheet. It all fits. So it's like if you look at each of the workshops and each of the worksheets, they're downs of pieces of a puzzle. You know, the whole body of work that we're doing here started out with one worksheet, and that was forgiveness and the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop. That was like the starting point. And out of that, these other workshops came through. It's like, well, now that we know that forgiveness is the key, what am I going to do about my stresses? What am I going to do about relationships? What am I going to do about communication? You know, what am I going to do about my purpose? And each of those becomes another tool, another piece in the whole puzzle of bringing this mind into alignment with truth and making of it a willing cooperative servant that carries my life forward rather than a misprogrammed device that I need to struggle with. So if you start thinking in terms of applying every tool that you've learned over the years with this work, then you'll see that they're all part of one big puzzle. Does that fit? Does that make sense of where your question's going?
Yes. Yes, they all tie in together. They're not separate entities without a connection. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, I might, in order, like you'll notice in the mind goal management sheet, one down at the bottom where the checkoff is this in alignment with my primary and secondary purpose? Well, gee, I need to start looking at what my purpose is. I need to be conscious of my purpose. I mean, there might be, the way I relate to it is that when you're unconscious about how goals affect the mind, the tendency for most people is to do all kinds of things that really have nothing to do with their lives, and they really waste a lot of information, or pardon me, a lot of energy. And so once you get a picture of what your purpose is, there are things that maybe you'd like to or enjoy doing, but they bear no resemblance or no relationship, I should say, with your life purpose, so you throw them away and you don't do them anymore. And the opposite is there are things that maybe you don't even like to do or you don't want to do, but you realize that they're required for you to fulfill your purpose, so you do them anyway. That was a big shift and a big switch for me. And so certain things you throw away that are distractions, even though you might enjoy them, and other things that you've thrown away, say, well, this is part of what I have to do to fulfill my purpose, so I'm going to do this. And so it's good to have a picture of what your primary and secondary purposes are. Primary being the universal experience. If you look at that workshop, Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment, my offering is the purpose of every human being on the planet is to strengthen their awareness of themselves as love and develop that spiritual body so that it is viable and functional in all circumstances. So realizing who we are as love and cultivating our relationship with ourselves as love is a big part of the purpose. And that's primary. That's the same for every person on the planet. And then we each have our unique purposes, which is what we refer to as the secondary purpose. And in that purpose, personal power, and commitment, we go through both of those. And the secondary is, what's the unique way that I'm here to achieve what we're all here to achieve? So, you know, the person who enjoys writing, their secondary purpose is to write. And somebody else might like, you know, I can't even stand sitting in front of the computer. I want to get out there and, you know, get in the garden. So recognizing what your secondary purpose is and then bringing them into alignment with your goals, like that's why that workshop, Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment is titled the way it is, that when I'm in alignment with my purpose, that's the key to having personal power, where some people are, you know, their energy's off over here and over there and over there, flitting around all over the place, and no focal point to focalize and center their power. Once you get clear on your primary and secondary purpose, then zing, there's a whole different clarity and a whole different level of ability to achieve what your purpose is. So each of those things, again, is part of the whole.
Yes. And you can work on this stuff forever, which is great. I mean,
it is definitely a lifetime of work.
Yes, it is. Can I ask you about this book? Have you ever heard of it? It's for people who have, I would call it a culture has it, but there were people that were zeroed out having attention deficit disorder, and there is actually a cure for the chronic disability that has become the norm in modern life. I'm reading the top of the book. It's called The Attention
Right.
Revolution, Unlocking the Power of the Focused Mind, initial B, Allen, A-L-A-N, Wallace, W-A-L-L-A-C-E, Ph.D. I'm not sure I should read this or if this is going to take me away from, I don't know. I'm not sure. I was referred to it by and I don't know if these terms are going to sound really bizarre to some of you people, but
it did to me at first, but I've known them for a long time, so I just accept it. He's the high priest. He's also a high priestess of the Nazarene Essene Church of Christ, and he recommended that to a lot of his followers.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a bookstore in a lighthouse in Oregon, and it's just the most favorite book that goes off the shelf all the time. And okay,
right.
So I just thought I'll find it, because if he said it, you can create anything you want, but if you don't have attention and keep your focus on it, you will never create it. And our
well, to me, that sounds.
Go ahead. Oh, and, you know, and our purpose is to be, not do, in bliss, you know, and be blissful and joyful and loving and happy. Yeah. But if you can't
live as a human being.
Yeah. Huh?
Live as a human being.
But he said you need the power of focus to do that. And this book will help a lot. He said that's the book that leaves this bookstore the most. So I don't know what your thoughts are on anything like that, because I don't, like you said, with talking about goals and then you're doing something that isn't taking it to your goal, or doing things that, Okay. Do you have anything to say on anything I share about that book?
Yeah. My take would be that the reason why people have what they call attention deficit disorder, I think the primary reason is because they're in a hyper aware mode and hyper protective, because as children they were blindsided by people in their environment. And so it's difficult for someone who thinks, I might get punched upside of my head if I get really focused here and work on this project, because as a kid, every time I would be sitting and playing or doing whatever it was I was doing, and, you know, dad came in drunk and I got smashed in the head. So now, you know, I'm looking every 2 minutes to make sure dad isn't sneaking up behind me ready to smash me in the head. And sadly, that's just too common a happening in our culture. So the forgiveness of the issues behind having to be hypervigilant, I think, is urgent. And that, to me, would tie in with this thing of being able to focus. Once I'm not in, I have to defend and protect myself, so I have to keep looking 360 degrees around me to be safe. Once I realize that I'm safe and I've cleaned that part up in my mind, now I can be totally focused and produce those results. So
well,
it sounds like, you know, I don't know what solutions he offers. Say again?
I don't either. He studied with the Dalai Lama, the author, and he's a physicist, and he's whatever, a theologian maybe, I'm not sure about that, but he did study and he taught it and taught meditation and all that. And I've done meditation and I've done a lot of things. And yeah, I can, if I choose to, spend half the day meditating, I mean, 2 times during the day. And I eventually can get into the habit of quieting my mind. However, I don't like to live like that. I mean, I enjoy life too, and it's not working anymore anyway. That I meditate to get to that level, and I think there's more to life than that. And then anyway, he combines all of his stuff. However, when you're talking about this, I had a voice coach in Los Angeles, and I didn't study with him for long, because he didn't like my style of music. And he said, Okay. So anyway, so he did say that I wrote something to him to tell him I was interested, and that I struggled my whole life, and
and I struggled with this. I'm not trying to emphasize struggle when I wrote it. I was not conscious that I was writing it that much. But he wrote me a letter back, and he said, the work he does is called The Sound of Your Soul, and that really inspired me because no one else touches your soul with music when they teach that I know of, that I've ever gotten involved with. Anyway, and
right.
he commented back about my letter and said, I would love to help you find the sound of your voice. However, did you know that everything you write about, it's suffer. You know, you suffer, you know, you're suffering. You have suffering. And, you know, I kind of felt kind of a weird feeling like I didn't notice that. And I feel so vulnerable that I'm even seeing this is opening up for me that, you know, from what he's saying. And he did say that I, as a matter of fact, I was going to do a worksheet on this. Something that he said to me, and I know I have it right down in my face here, but he did say, you're closed down to yourself. I don't have it directly in front of me. But I'm closed off from myself because I don't want to be vulnerable. Here it is. So he said, he said, I have to make a choice not to guard myself, because he sensed that everywhere from me, and not feel. That's why I made the choice to guard myself, okay, to not feel and not be vulnerable and be closed. That's how I felt protected. But I was even doing it from myself. Okay, so that must be all the carbon-based memory in myself that I was trying to guard myself against.
Well, that sounds like what I was talking about, being hypervigilant.
Yes,
and there's where the forgiveness process comes in,
to
remove the goals behind hypervigilant from your mind and heal the parts that live in fear. Cast that demon out. You know, perfect love casts out fear. Get rid of fear as a resonant energy in your mind.
Okay.
Then focus becomes natural. You set a goal and bingo. You're able to just totally lock in on that, and, you know, to the point where nothing else matters.
Can you elaborate on what was the first part of it, the things that the goals that make me feel vulnerable, or what was it?
Yeah. Start canceling the goals that have to do with not being safe, having to
not
protect yourself,
uh-huh.
having to look out
see.
For dangers in your environment.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I never canceled them because, you know, no one ever got to the point to ever go, there's something you need to do is cancel those. Instead, when I was younger and in getting 4-point averages in classical music and jazz, okay, I had a psychiatrist say, you were born with attention deficit disorder and you'll die with it. And so I took the Ritalin.
Thanks a lot, pal.
I took the Ritalin for about a week or two. I said, I can't be on this. I'm already hyper. And this stuff takes me, like, I feel like I'm on speed and I can't stand myself right now.
Sounds smart. It is speed.
And she said, if you don't do it the way I tell you to do it, I'm not going to keep you. And I said, okay, bye.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then I went to the school there. I studied classical music. And her colleague in the same office building was teaching. And I ran into him in the hallway. And he said, how are you doing with, I forgot her name or anything, but. And I said, well, I left her because she didn't want to work with me if I didn't take the Ritalin, and I felt terrible on it. I felt horrible. And he said, oh, that's her issue. And I just thought, okay, good, because, I mean, I'm not, you know. And so, you know, it was a short little brief walk, but I guess she has issues that she's projecting or something. I don't know what he meant by that, and it doesn't matter, but.
And I
and
thought,
virtually everyone does.
I went to a program for 4 years for jazz, and I was his best jazz student he ever had in his entire life. He was the trumpet player for the backing up Sarah Vaughan. He was in all the big bands and everything. My thing is, though, I really wasn't into big band stuff. And so I stayed with him 4 years, and he loved everything I did. And we composed music together and everything. And I have his letter sitting in front of my piano because he knew my background for some reason without even me talking about it, and said, let's do something. Let's record your music, have the band play it, and then invite your parents. Because he knew I had got no support from them. And so
so
they came, and he's so happy because, you know, he's happy with everything I did. But they weren't happy at all. Go ahead.
Question. Have you canceled your need for your parents' support yet?
No, but I'll make that a priority.
That's a big one. That'll be a big one.
Yeah, it is, isn't it, though?
That may well be your 77 times 70 worksheet issue.
Well, it is, because I think I shared with you one time that, you know, I was so desperate for my mom's love all the time. That was seriously hypervigilant. And being around my dad and everything was just kind of icky, you know. So I just tried to be whoever anybody wanted me to be, the chameleon and everything, and it still didn't work.
Right.
And I got into a car accident where I went through the front window and the T-top window crashed down on my face and tore half my face off. And I called my mom at 3 a.m. because I thought she'd love me then, right? I know love is not a verb. Okay, now I know that. And I think all these things subconsciously was trying to get her love. And I called her, and she said, what do you want? And I said, Mom, I'm in the hospital. I have my face tore off from an accident. You know what time it is? It's 3:00 a.m. Click. And, you know, I looked like a mummy for a long time with my face wrapped up. She didn't say a word.
Are you breathing right now? Are you breathing?
No, I guess I never really dealt with the depth.
Yeah, so slow down a little bit. Allow yourself to just take a couple of deep breaths and be with that and what the feelings were around that.
I'll never get love from her, but I still didn't stop because when she died, I was in Phoenix and I flew to Cincinnati. My siblings didn't want me to sit with them and everything like that, and so I went up to the coffin, and she wasn't moving or anything or saying anything to me, so I thought she was dead. I ran into the bathroom, and just because, well, I said to myself,
breathe.
Well, now, she'll never love me. And even though I know it's not a verb. I mean, it's not a verb. Nobody can love somebody. I learned that from you. Still, I guess I never canceled the goal or something.
Breathe. Go into it.
Because I'm surprised at the way I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
I thought he worked through everything.
Well, and you have worked through layers of it, and here's a new layer.
Okay.
And it's safe to breathe. Let yourself just fully breathe into that and feel what is you're feeling, and let yourself be conscious of the thoughts that are there.
Okay. Maybe I'm running in hyper-religiousness because I never canceled that goal or something consciously.
Yeah. Breathing. This is really big core stuff.
Anybody that meets me goes, that doesn't know me, goes, you seem really, really uncomfortable in your body, you know? And I don't like hearing that. I really don't like hearing that because I think I've worked on a lot of things, but I think I'm putting the icing without the cake, you know? I put the icing on, which is the fakeness.
Breathe.
Yes, maybe.
fake or something.
Breathe.
Okay. And everybody wants to misdiagnose it, but you know, this is all hallucination, right? It is, isn't it? Because
well,
it's all carbon-based memory, right?
Yeah, the thing to get is, you know, while this may be an hallucination, I need to let myself drop into what's underneath it and rid myself of that energy, or my mind will keep going back to that variation on the theme, and I'll find person after person to play it out with, whereas as you allow yourself to drop in and let go of those goals, you get right to the core thought disorder and throw it out.
This particular case would even be to have had my mom's love.
Sounds like it, yeah. Sounds like love, approval, attention.
Anything.
Yeah.
So
even though your mom's no longer in her body, they're important goals for you to cancel. And
yes,
allow yourself
okay.
to breathe into and let those energetic patterns go.
I think that's more important than reading this book called Attention, whatever it was called, Revolution, Unlocking the Power of the Focus Mind.
Yeah.
You know,
you just went right to the core.
Yeah.
Right to the core. Nice piece of work.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm in a state, a hyper-arousal state a lot, but I don't even know it, that I think that it's normal, that I don't even share my stuff with most people. My friends that's coming from, she lived in L.A. and I was going to move out there with her, but I ended up living in Phoenix. And I haven't seen her since I was in my 20s. And, you know, and she absolutely is the safest person in the world to be around. And I'm so happy she's coming. But I don't go out and try to be with people, you know. Just don't. And that's probably because all these core issues that I never canceled, whatever it is.
Yeah. So I'd focus in and work on these goals around mom. And if she's coming to visit, perhaps she'd just
Not
be
mom,
there
my
as
girlfriend.
The space.
Yeah, my girlfriend.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, your girlfriend. If she's coming to visit,
my mom.
That she could just be there as the space to process through these energetic dynamics.
You know, when you continually don't get love and you're a kid, you were supposed to get it. You were supposed to be held. You were supposed to be all this stuff, and you didn't. As a matter of fact, I want your opinion on something if you have time, or I can ask you another time. My son-in-law, okay, so I have a dog that barks all the time, and I believe he's just comes from a lot of trauma. I mean, you hold him, he's sweet as can be. And my daughter works at a 76 dog daycare, so she doesn't like to be around it because she's around it all day. I'm okay with that. Okay, so I could go down to her house. So when my son-in-law goes, do you know my mom believed in the Dr. Spock thing that when I cried she never picked me up, and never ever, okay, she didn't like crying, she yelled if I cried, whatever. And so And his theory is you don't pick them up. You let them cry it out. So she believed that in that, okay? She admitted that to
right.
me. And so I don't believe in that, because I saw a video one time 10 years ago or something on YouTube about you're helping regulate a baby's
the whole nervous system.
System, yeah. So what are your thoughts on, does it really do that? And when you don't comfort someone crying hysterically because they're helpless to meet their own needs at that age, do you agree that you need to not comfort them, or do you believe that they, what do you believe?
Well, if we recognize that the human being is love and that the parent is love, the connectedness for the child is support for life itself. I think some of the saddest teaching that's ever gone out to the world of parents is leave your child to cry it out. I think that's just an insane and perhaps bordering on criminal piece of advice.
Thank you.
Be my take.
Because I experienced it, and I was desperately, never grew up. I had a shrink that said, do you know you're a child in a woman's body? And I never heard that before, but that was when I was 21. And I'll tell you what, I know why. My child just is looking for it and looking for it and looking for it, and she knows she's not going to get it because she never got it. So, you know, I try to give it to her myself, and I do a good job. But anyway.
So, do you remember the love exchange exercise from that intensive you did a few years back?
I don't know, Michael, if I did that intensive, but I do have a video of this. It's in the Getting the Stress You Need video, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where you look at
so.
Each other, one's light, one's love. And,
right. That's
right?
It.
Oh, I've been
so
doing
I would
that
suggest
since
that.
Yeah, I did. I'm starting.
Yeah, I'd suggest you do some mirror
thing.
Work with yourself. Do that with yourself. And as you're doing it, you know, get in front of a mirror where you can see the upper part of your body at least. And as you do that, reach your hand out to the mirror, touching your own heart, the reflection of your heart, and make that heart connection and really strengthen that functioning from that space of connected love. And as you look into your own eyes, allow yourself to just process every thought that comes and free yourself of the trauma that's going to surface as you do that. The stronger you're able to bring love present to that, the deeper you're going to go in processing through, in releasing, physiologically releasing the energetic patterns of that. So I would say that would be really powerful for you to do, is just standing in front of the mirror and doing that love exchange, and do it, you know, on a regular basis for some extended period of time to let those layers process out and move through.
So when I saw it on your video yesterday, which I've known about it, but you put it away for decades, and yeah, it comes out, and then you're like, oh, yeah, I remember sort of this. And I looked in the mirror and I thought, well, what can I focus on? This was yesterday. Well, what can I focus on? I don't feel the love exchange from me looking at myself in the mirror. What can I think of that generates love in me? Of course, looking at my dogs being taken care of, where, you know, is pretty well. And they're happy and they're running around the 2 acres. And this is just the greatest thing in the world. My eyes see, right? And so I go, well, look at yourself like you look at when you're looking at your dogs running around 2 acres out in the backyard. I don't know if I can transfer
go
that.
For it.
Okay. Because I don't really
remember
know
the
what
idea.
At me, what love looks like, okay? Usually,
yeah.
Hopefully,
so
have
the idea
a parent.
Is to the idea is to get the mind to quiet and allow the space of being to come forward. One of the other things I remember was recently in a conversation, your whole demeanor, your voice, your energy shifted into, my experience was, a deeper place of love when you mentioned your daughter. And
of
so
course.
You might go back to the first time you remember holding your daughter. That's the one I use that I find most powerful. And so you might allow yourself to be in that.
I will
go
back go
with
that
love. And practice perhaps doing the love exchange physically with your daughter.
Oh, she'll let me.
Yeah, well.
No. Okay. Can I say?
Chances are.
Yeah. To make it sound
chances
like
are. Chances are, and the show's going to cut off any second, so we'll just go right through. Chances are that, you know, there was some of that desire from her for love that she had difficulty getting from you. That's probably a generational pattern. So some of that may move through and work. You may have to work through it, but hey, what an opportunity.
Sure. Do I help her if it comes up in her?
Be the space.
She doesn't want to do work. But she doesn't have to do worksheets.
Maybe just sitting, holding the space, just looking in each other's eyes and bring that love present.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, you know, it could be as simple as a request of, honey, would you sit down and just allow me to just hold the space and extend love to you? Would you let me do that and allow yourself to reach out and go for it?
I do it without telling her that I'm doing it. I rub her back and I rub her shoulders and then I give her a cute little hug, you know, and a kiss on the cheek when she leaves or just, you know, and I always say, we love you,
sweet.
Michelle, we love you, you know.
Awesome.
And I can tell she's so thirsty for it. It's unbelievable. Okay, is that me or is that her? It's both of us, okay.
Yes. Yes would be the answer.
Yes.
Go for it, girl. Go for it. You're right on track.
All right, thanks.
All right. Blessings.
All right.
Holding the space. All right. Lots of love, everybody. Appreciate you joining us. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Bye-bye.